This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The ongoing government shutdown, now entering its fourth week. Critical programs like SNAP, which provides food vouchers, are set to run out of funding, and furloughed workers, including the military, are facing hardships. George Matisic is the executive director of the Philadelphia-based Share Food Program and has more on the challenges.
What's different than this and the pandemic is you had bipartisan support and a number of programs that came in to help support food banks like Share Food Program in 2020 in a bipartisan way. This time, it's like a horror movie where the call's coming from within the House. Our own federal government is choosing this.
President Trump is pressing for his Justice Department to pay roughly $230 million as a settlement for investigations he faced during the Biden administration and his first term in office. Sources familiar with the matter confirmed to ABC News. OpenAI launching its own browser called Atlas. It's all to compete with Google's Chrome. This is ABC News.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thede. Average gasoline prices in Wisconsin have fallen 6.7 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $2.61 a gallon, according to Gas Buddy's survey of over 3,000 stations in Wisconsin. Prices in Wisconsin are 28.6 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 32.4 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. According to Gas Buddy price reports, the cheapest station in Wisconsin was priced at $2.36 a gallon, while the most expensive was $3.17 a gallon, a difference of 81 cents per gallon. The national average price of gasoline has fallen 4.1 cents per gallon in the last week, averaging $2.98 a gallon. The national average is down 19.3 cents per gallon from a month ago and stands 15.2 cents per gallon lower than a year ago, according to GasBuddy data compiled from more than 11 million weekly price reports covering over 150,000 gas stations across the country. The national average price of diesel has decreased 3.7 cents compared to a week ago and stands at $3.59 per gallon. Gas prices have finally fallen below $3 per gallon nationally, the earliest date we've seen a $2.99 national average since 2020, when COVID was the primary driver of low prices, said Patrick DeHaan, head of petroleum analysis at GasBuddy. OPEC Plus deserves much of the credit for this trend, having steadily raised oil production for much of 2025. For WRCE News, I'm Tim Thede.
The Packers prepare for Pittsburgh. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, the Packers play the Steelers this week on Sunday night. Matt LaFleur asked about running back Josh Jacobs demanding to get back in the game against the Cardinals Sunday despite a strained calf muscle.
Yeah, he's a grown man. There's no doubt about it. What he says is always backed up by his actions, and I think that's number one on top of the list of what you need to be in order to be a great leader.
Baseball, the Blue Jays beat the Mariners 4-3. To advance to the World Series, Game 1 will be Friday night in Toronto against the Dodgers. Doc Rivers was asked if he still goes golfing with his friend, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
We plan on golf a lot. We never actually get to do it much. But the Brewers, they had an amazing year. And if you're going to lose, you lose to the most historic game in Major League history, and that's how they lost.
That's the Bucks, Doc Rivers, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy and breezy for tonight with occasional showers and a low close to 40. We'll look for more clouds for tomorrow, a pop-up shower or two possible, and still breezy, a high in the upper 40s. A return to sunshine for Thursday and Friday, a high in the low 50s. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Conrad has restless leg syndrome where it's hard to control your leg. And you got to be careful. There's a lot of expensive stuff around this studio. So, Con? What broke over there just now?
A couple speakers.
They just redid the studio. We'll be dealing with home. Sorry. This is a serious thing. All right, what are we going to do here?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian and podcast host Jimmy Pardo, then Mission 1 Billion co-founders Rex Sykes and Rocky Wagonhurst join the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
They wish to break the entire thing. That is the objective. It isn't about efficiency. It's about breaking it. And it's about breaking it for what end?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Gerrymandering is bad for everybody.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Keep hope alive. We're doing it every day from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on this program. Remember, you can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you miss our live broadcasts, you can find those at civicmedia.us/shows, of course, on Apple Pods as well as Spotify. And tell all of your friends in the southeastern Wisconsin area, we've got a brand new Big FM channel, 100.3 FM. You can hear us clear as a bell. So join us every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. because we get to talk to incredibly unheralded heroes and thinkers and researchers like the gentleman that is my very next guest. Now, I am happy to report that he is no longer unheralded. He is one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Grant Foundation award recipients this year. His name is Angel Adames Koralitza. I hope I got that mostly right. He is the UW-Madison Associate Professor and Chair of the Climatology, Atmospheric, and Ocean Sciences. That is the Ned P. Smith Distinguished Chair. Want to give those donors their due who established the endowed chairs. Congratulations, Angel, and welcome to the show. I'm so extremely happy for you. Quite an honor you've received.
Thank you. It feels like I've been transported to a completely different dimension, but it's a great pleasure to be here.
It's a good dimension to be in. Folks, if you're unfamiliar with the MacArthur Foundation, they give these fellowships out every year. They go to writers and artists, social scientists, hard scientists, teachers, business owners, entrepreneurs, a whole wide range of folks. And to be considered for this, you're nominated anonymously, which is, I understand it, you get a random phone call, and sometimes they even have to like engage in a little cloak and dagger to get people to pick up these calls so that the MacArthur Foundation folks can be like, you just got a great big fellowship to help you study what is your life's work. How did they let you know about your award? And did you have any idea that this was happening?
No idea that this was happening. I was definitely one of those cloak and dagger people. I was tricked. I got an email from them that they wanted to talk to me about tropical weather and climate because of some stuff that they were doing. And so I had no idea what was going on. I told my partner, I got like nervous because I was like, oh, it's the MacArthur Foundation. You know, they must be doing something serious. But I didn't think that I was going to be a fellow. And it's funny, my partner told me, it's like, oh, did she just give you money? you know, and I was like, oh, but I just don't think that's what's going to happen. I think that they're just doing some kind of nonprofit thing and just want to talk to me. But it turned out when I got the phone call that they were going to give me the fellowship and I was coming with money. And I was like, what? And then my brain melted. I don't remember anything else, to be honest with you.
What an incredibly amazing phone call to get. These fellowships are $800,000. It is no strings attached money. It is given to these folks. Again, there's this major anonymous nomination process. They go through all of these panels of review, and it's basically to help people, again, pursue their life's work in these given fields. And again, you have to be extraordinarily talented. You have to have creativity. It is really an acknowledgement of not just your work to date, but your potential as a major contributor to basically, and I don't mean to sound too metaphoric about this, to human understanding and collective knowledge. So again, Angel, like, congratulations from the bottom of my heart. I was so thrilled to see that two Wisconsin researchers got the grant this year.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And I understand that I think University of Wisconsin is the only institution that got to this year. So yeah, props to us. We're great.
Quite an honor. The University of Wisconsin, Madison, my alma mater, it's an R1 research institution. It is so well known for so many areas of study. And it really, it's a credit to everyone who calls themselves a Wisconsinite. Thank you for pointing out the fact that UW-Madison stood alone in this grant award cycle as a university that had two recipients. Tell folks a little bit about what your area of expertise is and what you have been researching and studying.
Yeah, so in short, I am a tropical meteorologist. I study the weather and climate of the tropical latitudes. And I'm actually one of maybe a handful of scientists who does theory observations and also looks at model output. So I do a lot of the math and physics of trying to understand what drives tropical weather patterns, everything from the clouds all the way to the planetary scale. You name it, I probably looked at it.
Well, and the interesting thing here is, you know, I was reading recently, and I'm going to just specifically talk about weather forecasting for a moment. We're going to bring it back to your area of study in a moment. You know, weather folks get this tongue-in-cheek, oh, they get it right, maybe they get it right half the time. Turns out, at least in the before times, weather forecasters got it right about 80% of the time, which I think is really key. And in this age of climate change, where we're seeing weather patterns and climate-related events, natural disasters, things that folks have to prepare for, happening much more frequently and with much greater acuity, researchers like yourselves, as well as the meteorology, are really hand in hand to try to help people not be caught off guard by these things. And I wanted to just briefly ask you, how impactful is one of these MacArthur Genius Grants for a researcher like yourself? This administration has been ruthless in basically attacking research as well as federal grants that help fund research in our institutions of higher education, both private and public. This must be a life changer in terms of what you can pursue in your given area of expertise.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think in different times, this would have been like, it still is a shock, right? But like, I think in previous times, like, it would have been somewhat different in that, like, it would have opened to a lot of new windows for things. But the reality is that in the current era that we're in, before I got the call, my plans were to just cut back on my research because the funding isn't there. I hadn't gotten any grants removed. I've known other people that have, but I didn't see the point in applying for grants when you know that the money is not going to be there, or that they were just going to find a way to like not give it to you anyways. And so I was planning on rolling back and kind of going into like hibernation mode. And so now I get to stand privileged amongst many of my colleagues because I can actually continue doing the research because now I've got the MacArthur Fellowship. But the reality for the majority of weather and climate scientists is that the amount of money is getting cut back. You know, I mean, you can always hope that things are going to change and it won't be as bad, but it looks bad, you know, and it's been bad. And now I can explore. I still am thinking of exploring new ideas, but the plan was to cut back, and now I'm not going to cut back, and that's really what's going to happen.
Thank goodness for that. I'm so happy to hear that for you. But I remain extraordinarily worried for us, literally all of us, because this is the type of, again, innovation, ingenuity, the creativity, moving into new areas, expanding knowledge base, expanding those research areas that are basically now in peril. And folks, if you're just joining us, let me just reset a bit. We're with one of the University of Wisconsin-Madison's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients for this year. It is given to people who have both established themselves in their life's work, but also show incredible promise and creativity for future developments. It is a life-changing amount of money. It is no strings attached. It lets people do what they do best in various areas of study. His name is Professor Angel Adames Koralitza. Again, he's an associate professor at UW-Madison focusing on climatology. You mentioned something that I thought was really interesting. I don't think many people understand the mathematics, the physics that go into an area of study like yours, as well as just basic meteorology and forecasting. It is all math. It is all very complex models. Tell us a little bit about that in as much of layperson approachable terms, and how this helps us understand and prepare for the impacts of climate change, weather readiness, the applications that actually impact folks' lives.
Yeah, so let's talk about like the weather forecasting models, right? Because I think that's the stuff that's more tangible to people.
Yes.
Because that's the stuff that you look at your phone, you get up, you look at the forecast, right? So forecasts are actually made by what we call weather forecasting models. They're like computer code. And they're usually run on the world's most powerful computers. Like, it takes that much power to run a weather forecast model because the planet is incredibly complex. Clouds are incredibly complex. Winds, pressure, all these things are complicated. They're interacting with each other. So it takes a ton of computer power in order to create a weather forecast. Same with a climate forecast. So all these models that are trying to tell us how our climate is changing, they're run in our strongest, most powerful computing systems on Earth. So what I do is that I try to extract what are like the basic processes that might control certain phenomena, for example. So how can we distill this to the most basic things so they can inform us as to what things are important so they can go back to the community, educate the community so they know what are the patterns that they should be looking out for, but also talk with the people who are running the models and doing the code building so we can get ideas on how to improve forecasts or improve climate projections.
One way to put this, and Angel, correct me if I am wrong, is you are one of the scientists and data scientists and physicists that help build the AI models so that the AI model is better. I think people think of AI as this like thing that exists, but you have to build it and you have to train it so that it produces robust outcomes. Your work helps feed that, helps us build those better AI models that helps all of us look at our phone and know whether it's going to rain or snow tomorrow. Is that too dumbed down? I don't want to do your work any disrespect. You are a MacArthur genius after all.
No, so actually, so the AI stuff is all new, right? It's been the
yes.
latest revolution in numerical weather prediction. It's way faster than the numerical models that take like enormous computer power that I was like, talking about. These are things that can run extremely fast and efficiently, but they need to get trained with data. And so the stuff that I study, and I was actually at a conference earlier this year in Thailand because people in Southeast Asia are trying to build their own AI model, and they want to know what to train their AI models on. So they're bringing the people who kind of study the physical processes and be like, these are the key variables. You know, these are the key fields that you want to look at to maximize getting the most out of your training, for example. So even though I don't do any AI myself, I interact with the people who do the forecasting and help them understand what are the things that they should be looking at most carefully.
It's such incredibly important work. We're going to review some most recent headlines. We're also going to review what one of South Florida's most beloved meteorologists said just a few months ago about whether or not his viewers can continue to rely on his weather forecasts and why it remains important for all of us to encourage our federal government to fund researchers like my special guest, Professor Angel Adames Corraliza of the UW-Madison Climate Department, and again, MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipient. Don't go anywhere. Our conversation continues on the other side.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In 2023, under pressure from election conspiracy activists, Texas and nine other red states left the multi-state cooperative called ERIC, which helped to keep state voter rolls clean. 2 years later, local election officials are asking Texas state election officials for immediate fixes to its reportedly erratic homegrown voter registration system called TEAM. Governor Greg Abbott signed SB 1070 in June 2023, authorizing state officials to create a state-run interstate voter registration cross-check system. Over 2 years later, and on the eve of the TEAM system's rollout, VoteBeat Texas reports that four organizations representing Texas election officials cited inconsistent system behavior, only intermittent and under-resourced support, and statewide training gaps. Just last month, Texas Secretary of State Jane Nelson announced agreements with nine states to share and compare voter registration data in an effort to replace the Electronic Registration Information Center's sophisticated data processing capability to identify voters who moved, died, or registered in more than one state. The Texas election officials said in their letter, "The current state of the TEAM rollout creates undue risk to voters and the integrity of election officials," and urged action before November 4th. We've linked to local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Everybody, welcome. If you're just joining us, boy, my Tuesday is flying by. I love talking to smart people. We have got a literal genius with us for the rest of this half hour. His name is Professor Angel Adames Corraliza. He's with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is their Ned P. Smith Distinguished Chair of Climatology, Atmospheric and Ocean Studies. As I noted, he is one of UW-Madison's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients for this year. I will begin again with my congratulations to you, Angel. And before the break, I promised our listeners that I would just review a handful of headlines just from October that are talking about impacts of climate. This is from the AP, October 14th. Rare October storm in Southern California prompts evacuations and causes freeway accidents. October 15th, also at the AP. La Nina conditions observed in the Pacific. It could cause a snowy winter in the Midwest. The Guardian, October 16th. Carbon dioxide from wildfires increases by 9% as climate change supercharges infernos. WAPO on October 16th, one of Alaska's biggest airshifts is now underway after massive storm. I talked about that yesterday a bit. Houston Chronicle, October 16th, cold front arrives in Houston on Tuesday. Here's how far temperatures could drop. And the UN agency says CO2 levels hit record high last year, causing more extreme weather. Wanted to play a brief clip of one of South Florida's most beloved meteorologists who's been on the TV for 34 years. This is a guy that everybody knows. They would recognize him on the street. They trust him. Listen to what this guy said about this administration's cut to research, cuts to NOAA, and basically attack on science.
As you've grown accustomed to my presentations over my 34 years in South Florida newscasts, confidently, I went on TV and I told you, it's going to turn. You don't need to worry. It is going to turn. And I am here to tell you that I am not sure I can do that this year. Because of the cuts, the gutting, the sledgehammer attack on science in general, and I could talk about that for a long, long time, and how that is affecting the U.S. Leadership in science over many years, and how we're losing that leadership, and this is a multi-generational impact on science in this country, all right? But specifically, let's talk about the federal government cuts to the National Weather Service and to NOAA. Did you know that Central and South Florida National Weather Service offices are currently basically 20 to 40% understaffed? From Tampa to Key West, including the Miami office, 20 to 40% understaffed. Now, this type of staffing shortage is having impacts across the nation because there's been a nearly 20% reduction in weather balloon releases, launches, that carry those radio sons. And what we're starting to see is that the quality of the forecasts is becoming degraded.
We're going to post a longer clip of that in our show notes for today so people can look at it. If you will you explain to people what's going on with the weather balloons, if you don't mind? And secondly, that there is actually an international consortium of what I'm going to call weather and climate scientists that work together on these massive forecasting models. Tell us a little bit about how all this works.
Yeah, so the cuts of the weather balloons, so the weather balloons are made with hydrogen and with latex, and they have all these instruments called the radiosondes. They're actually quite pricey, so you have to have a decent budget in order to access them. So getting funds cut for them means that you can't actually send as many, and they're this essentially the backbone of our weather forecast models, because they're the observations that go into our weather forecasting models. So they're like the ground truth. If maybe we also use satellite data. The satellite data is the biggest amount of data that we have, but we calibrate our satellite's data with radio sounds observations too. So losing that is a big loss. The speaker didn't talk about the potentially even bigger problem that we're going to start losing our satellite constellations, which is the backbone, again, like I said, also the backbone of weather forecasting. And there's no plans to replace a lot of these satellites either.
It's so shocking to me. It's just the absence of the information. I've bemoaned the fact that we still talk about 100-year and 1,000-year floods based on data and modeling from the 70s, that those words don't have any meaning anymore. This is sort of like the latest iteration. We've got about 2 minutes left. Angel, and if you're just joining us, we're with one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients. He is Associate Professor Angel Adames Koralitza out of UW-Madison. Talk to the people out there. Tell them why what you do and what scientists do writ large is so important to public health, safety, and wellness overall in every state of the union.
I mean, what I do is just learn, right? And write what we learn and send it out. Our money is using taxpayer, we pay with using taxpayer money. You know, everybody deserves knowledge, it shouldn't be something that's prevented from being part of everybody's knowledge base. What I try to do is to communicate what I know, what I understand, and use that knowledge to improve weather and climate forecasts. So ultimately, I don't have an agenda, right? Like my agenda is to do my work, and the outcome of my work is to improve people's lives, So that's what it is. We try to make people's lives better by doing research.
Yeah, we make people's lives better by following research, by doing good research, by doing good objective science. That is how we make, whether it's forecasting models or flood risk reduction, floodplain models, robust and vigorous. And that benefits us all. That's why we need federal dollars supporting them. But Angel, personally, I am so glad and so proud to be from the state where you do your research, and so proud and happy for you that you are indeed a genius. I would love to have you back. We can talk about academia. We can talk more about your research, but congratulations to you, friend.
Oh, yeah. Happy to chat anytime. Just feel free to contact me once again. This has been a great pleasure.
Wonderful. When we come back, folks, I'm going to dig into Donald Trump not really giving a whit about farmers, but $20 billion, maybe $40 billion for Argentina. Make it make sense. Keep listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the center, WRCE.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
For WRCE 107.7 and AM 1450 News, I'm Tim Thied. A two-vehicle crash Sunday morning resulted in injury. At approximately 8:25, the Grant County Sheriff's Office was notified of a two-vehicle crash at the intersection of Highway 18 and County Highway F in Fenimore Township. Grant County deputies, along with emergency crews from Fenimore Fire and EMS and the Fenimore Police Department, responded to the scene. During the investigation, it was determined that John Haas, 41 of Potosi, was traveling north on County F. As he approached the intersection with Highway 18, he failed to stop at the stop sign on F at Highway 18 and continued into the intersection. At the same time, Kevin Megan, 28 of Poplar Grove, Illinois, was traveling west on Highway 18. Megan's vehicle struck the passenger side of Haas's vehicle while causing heavy damage to both vehicles as they came to rest in the north ditch. Fenimore EMS treated both parties at the scene, and Kevin Megan was transported to the Grant Regional Health Center in Lancaster for treatment of his injuries. John Haas was taken by private vehicle to a care provider. Heavy fog is believed to be a contributing factor in the crash. The American Red Cross is asking you to make an appointment now to give blood or platelets. You can help by donating at an area blood drive. A blood drive will be held Wednesday from 9:30 to 1:30 at the American Legion in Waniwak. Make an appointment to give by visiting redcrossblood.org, calling 1-800-RED-CROSS, or by using the Red Cross Blood Donor app. For WRCE News, I'm Tim Thied.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The live part of Saturday Night Live can be a liability at times, as proven this past weekend. Sabrina Carpenter appeared on the show as the host and musical guest. The host side of Carpenter did fine, but the musical side dropped two F-bombs during her song Nobody's Son from her new album Man's Best Friend. Both F-words played live during the broadcast and on the Peacock simulcast, but after some editing, the West Coast saw the PG-13 version. Carpenter performed wearing a karate gi, but unfortunately they were not able to edit out her wardrobe. Here's one of Pete's picks. Roofman is worth a look. This well-reviewed action comedy is a true story about a man who breaks into McDonald's stores through the roof. Even after getting caught, he manages to escape prison and live in a Toys R Us for several months while making a plan to escape the country. The film stars Channing Tatum, Peter Dinklage, and Kirsten Dunst, and was a really fun watch with a really nice but not too preachy message. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy and breezy for tonight with occasional showers and a low close to 40. We'll look for more clouds for tomorrow, a pop-up shower or two possible, and still breezy, a high in the upper 40s. A return to sunshine for Thursday and Friday, a high in the low 50s. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Join me, Tom Hartman, each and every weekday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program right here on Civic Media. I talk about the issues that all Wisconsinites can get behind, from unrigging our economy so it works for all of us, not just the billionaire class, to improving our representative government, to delivering on the promise of we the people. Tune in middays right here on your local Civic Media station from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for the Tom Hartman Program. Tag, you're it.
Matt Nair on air.
He is the executive director of Back 40 Action. Will Westmoreland is here. So, Will, we can't sell our soybeans. There's no market for that. But Brooke Rollins, Secretary of Agriculture, says it's all great. What are you hearing from fellow farmers?
Well, Jane, we are the world's leader in one department of agriculture now that Donald Trump is president and Brooke Rollins is Secretary of Agriculture, and that's word salad.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time. From Indiana University canceling its school newspaper to northern Wisconsin being served by high school students, we'll discuss it with Pat Kreitel and Trigg Olson. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Everybody, welcome if you're rejoining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I so love talking to nerds, and I mean that with a lot of love and respect. Big, big thank you to the professor from UW-Madison, who was just a recipient of their MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant, Angel Adames Corraliza. Thank you so much for making us all a little bit smarter. Suffice it to say, it should be a nonpartisan thing to fund good research at the university level. It should be a nonpartisan thing that you can't use the IRS to target your political enemies. It should be a nonpartisan thing that we probably should be spending more money studying climate and meteorology and not less. But, you know, so much for common sense. Listen, Donald Trump, in his campaign and in his inaugural address, constantly uses this phrase, this claim that he puts America first. He said this in his second inaugural address back in January. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first. That's not true. What he should have said is, I will put myself and my interests first, and I will break my oath to uphold and defend the Constitution every day. That would have been more accurate. But that's what he said. And so when you talk to small business owners and farmers about what the Donald Trump tariff terror taco nonsense is doing to them, it's not good. And farmers don't want bailouts. They just want to sell their crops. So the Trump administration has just pledged $20 billion U.S. taxpayer dollars, in other words, reached into your pocket, took some of the money that you made, and is now just giving it to Argentina. We can get into the whys in a moment, but I wanted to take a breath because, again, here's what he said. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first. So a reporter on Air Force One asked him about that and the $20 billion boondoggle giveaway to Argentina. And listen to how he responds.
The question is, what do you have to say to U.S. farmers who feel that the deal is benefiting Argentina more than it is them, as look, they are
a top Argentina's farmer. Fighting for its life, young lady. You don't know anything about it. They're fighting for their life. Nothing's benefiting Argentina. They're fighting for their life. You understand what that means? They have no money. They have no anything. They're fighting so hard to survive. If I can help them survive in a free world, I happen to like the president of Argentina. I think he's trying to do the best he can. But don't make it sound like they're doing great. They are dying. All right? They're dying.
young lady, you don't know anything about it. I'm trying to save them. I like their president. By the way, their president is kind of like a wannabe Trump. The next time some conservative calls me up on the horn and starts deflecting or disrespecting or disinforming, I'm going to be like, young man, because they're always men. Young man, you don't know anything about it. And see how that lands. If I can't say that to a caller, why does the president of the United States get to address a reporter who's asking a completely legitimate question that way? And make note, it's always I. And in addition, I think there might be a few other countries, Ukraine, where people are dying and fighting for their lives. If that's the decision rule, where are the Tomahawk missiles, Mr. President? Where's the massive aid package to Ukraine? It has nothing to do with the plight of Argentinians. It has everything to do with billionaire hedge funds who got over-levered into Argentina and now are standing to lose billions there unless the U.S. comes and props up the Argentinian currency. That's what it's about. It is only and ever about the freaking money and the billionaires. So he's taking out of your pocket to prop up the Argentinian currency to benefit the billionaire bro club. That's what's going on here. I just... By the way, again, this is according to reporting by the New York Times. Last week, when Mr. Trump met with Javier Milei, the president of Argentina, to discuss the financial package that the Treasury Department has proposed, the president sounded a different tune. Just helping a great philosophy take over a great country, Trump said. Should we parse that a wee bit together, shall we? Just helping a great philosophy take over a great country. What great philosophy is this? Oh, by the way, this guy, Javier Milei, he's a Trump ally and a very, very, very far right, kind of alt-right conservative. So let's get this straight. I'm helping an alt-right Argentinian conservative birthed in my own image, quote, take over. It's weird what comes flying out of his mouth, isn't it? Like, oh, gosh. He doesn't mean take over. There's supposed to be a debate. Yes, he means take over, because guess what he's doing here, folks? Taking over, violating the Constitution every day. Take over a great country. Then he went on to this insightful, like uber-intelligent breakdown of the delicate economic situation that's been plaguing Argentina for what? Oh, by the way, decades. Argentina is one of the most beautiful countries that I've ever seen. And we want to see it succeed. Very simple. Very simple. It's my beautiful country. Again, if this is the decision line or the decision rule, there's beautiful countries all over the place. Note what he's not talking about. He's not talking about what's wrong with the peso. The day after this meeting, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent doubled down on the administration's commitment to Argentina, which is heavily indebted, perennially troubled. This has been going on with the Argentinian peso, again, for decades. It goes back to the time that I was in graduate school in the late 90s. And why would we care about the Argentinian peso? To put this in perspective, the U.S. exported a measly $16.5 billion worth of goods and services to Argentina. We're just going to give them $20 billion. They can just buy our goods back from us. We'll just give them $20 bills. That's fine. $16.5 billion exported to Argentina last year, compared to $384 billion with Mexico and $80 billion with Brazil. And then Scott Bessent says actually he's cooking up an additional $20 billion, so $40 billion to Argentina. But this one is supposed to be financed by banks and investment funds rather than the U.S. taxpayer. But I want to just throw this out there for some debate and thinking. Banks and investment funds don't give money away for nothing. So, like, what's the collateral? Are they buying an interest in the Argentinian government? Are they buying pesos? Well, what happens if the peso continues in its free fall and inflation explodes and then, you know, goods disappear and there's bread lines and sort of riots in Argentina? How are they, like, again, I don't know banks and investment funds, read hedge funds, to just give away billions of dollars. They usually want something in return. So I wonder if the U.S. banks and hedge funds' additional $20 billion in investment, air quotes, I don't know what they're investing in, announced by Treasury Secretary Bessent, I wondered if that goes completely south. In other words, it blows up, it doesn't start the stop the Argentinian peso's free fall. I wonder if the Trump administration might again help out the billionaire boys club. I'm just asking questions here. By the way, the president of Argentina has appeared at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, like annual, their big annual jamboree. This is the guy that gave the chainsaw to billionaire bro of billionaire bros, Elon Musk. It's this guy. By the way, I think Elon Musk and Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary, are not on good terms, not going well. Elon Musk, I think, just called him Sean Dummy instead of his name, Sean Duffy, just as a little aside. Here are some of the policies of the president of Argentina that ultimately has led their economy into a death spiral. See if any of this sounds familiar. Massive spending cuts across Argentina's federal government, slashing public pensions, firing thousands of public sector workers, slashing programs that help folks in poverty or in need. Does any of that sound at all vaguely familiar? I don't know how to emphasize how incredibly foolhardy and stupid this is. And lest any conservative get on the phone and call me up about the investment that the Clinton administration made in Argentina back in 1995. Not in Argentina. It was to Mexico in 1995. It's because of the trading relationship with Mexico. It also went through a whole vetting process through the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It very different. It also involved the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, back in 95. It's very different. Here's what the former chief economist at the IMF said about this boondoggle, this billionaire boys club giveaway funded by U.S. taxpayers that's ostensibly about helping this beautiful country, Argentina, whether it's $20 billion, maybe it's $40 billion. Here's what he said, quote, "What's worrisome here is that Trump and Bessette are repeatedly saying that we will be there in Argentina for the long term and we will do whatever it takes. He is effectively saying to foreign investors, you will be able to get out whole. That means it's really $40 billion that U.S. taxpayers are on the hook for. What an abomination. I've saved the best for last. We got a little shutdown update coming up next. Don't go anywhere. We'll take your calls as well. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Also, Argentina, that's where all the Nazis went after World War II. Just saying. Stay tuned, everybody.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew.
This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
Hi, I'm Chuck McDowell, the timeshare cancellation guy. In 2011, I founded Wesley Financial Group with one goal in mind, to help honest folks out of their timeshares permanently. Today, I run Wesley with my two sons, a real family business, treating every client and every employee like we'd want our own family treated. That philosophy has helped us grow into the largest, most trusted timeshare cancellation company in the United States. Fortune magazine even recognized us as one of the best places to work. Why? Because we genuinely care. In fact, some of our former clients were so moved by their experience working with us, they joined our team so they could help others to timeshare freedom. If you're stuck in a timeshare, give us a call. Let our family help your family.
Call Wesley now for your free timeshare exit kit. 800-549-8866. 800-549-8866. 800-549-8866.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison, home of the Big Win and Madison Casino Guru, is transforming guests into winners, making an ordinary day into a big win day is easy with a 95% average payout. And with over 140 daily jackpots, the number of people winning has never been bigger. So what are you waiting for? Escape to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison for your next big win.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison.
Looking for seed that performs? FS Envision Seed Corn and FS High Soy Soybeans deliver top-tier performance, field-tested reliability, and trusted local FS expertise. Your local FS crop specialist is here from planting to harvest, helping you get the most out of every acre, every season. Seed that performs, support that delivers. Ask your local FS crop specialist about FS Envision and FS High Soy, or visit FSC.com to learn more.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires. When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers, the consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us in giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll, I'm a Patriotic Millionaire, and I approve this message.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. We have reached the last segment of this Tuesday show. Boy, time flies when I'm hanging out with each and every one of you. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One last, excuse me, little tidbit about the Argentina problem. So the $20 or $40 billion that we're giving Argentina, here's what reporting from the Wall Street Journal says. That's welcome news for American hedge funds that have been investing in Argentinian assets. One such hedge fund is Discovery Capital Management, founded by Robert Citrone. Okay, so keep in mind, Discovery Capital Management, Robert Citrone. At the end of last month, it was pointed out by a financial journalist that Citrone used to work with whom? Scott Bessent. Ah, yes. Back for years, starting in 2013. And whom did they both work for? George Soros. the boogeyman of conservative nightmares. After that reporting from this financial journalist about Scott Bessent's working relationship with Citrone, the guy that owns one of these major hedge funds that has taken this massive position in Argentina that Trump is now giving 20 or maybe 40 billion of taxpayer funds to help prop up a peso, even though Argentina only imports less than $20 billion in U.S. goods every year. But maybe it's because the guy is like a mini Trump in Argentina. Oh, and maybe because all of the Trump-style policies that that president put in place in Argentina did what? Crushed the middle class and tanked their economy, and now the Argentinian peso is in free fall? Okay, after all that came out, the New York Times then reported that Citrone was, quote, in close contact with Treasury Secretary Bessent in the lead-up to the Treasury announcement of the $20 billion taxpayer-funded bailout to Argentina when it was announced last month. So, you know, they were talking a little. I wonder what they were talking about. And again, I can't believe I'm saying this. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene got this one right. She's been posting on X, Americans are getting decimated with the high cost of living and skyrocketing insurance costs. Many of them have zero savings and some are maxing out credit cards to survive. Tell me how it's America first to bail out a foreign country with 20 or even 40 billion in taxpayer dollars. Pretty good question, Marjorie. Just saying. Troy from Mount Horeb, how you doing, friend? Welcome to the show. What you got for us?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, friend.
Good, good. So the Kansas City Star wrote an article, Kansas, Missouri farmers went big for Trump as tariffs are cutting them. So a friend of mine posted that on Facebook, and a friend of hers, as a farmer, I can tell you that it's categorically false. Commodity prices are nothing special, but there are no farmers out there blaming tariffs. And I said to him, well, they should be blaming the tariffs. And he said to me, no, sir, farmers are doing better right now than the majority of Biden's 4 years. Don't open your mouth about something you know nothing about. So
this is a farmer
up in El Dorado. So
yeah, it's amazing to me. Thanks, Troy. We've got sounds of farmers saying exactly the opposite. The collective delusion, right, that reinforces itself every day, that I can't get through when I talk to conservatives or when I try to text with them and I'm being specific about things and they're like, but Biden and the border, blah, blah, blah. If we can't actually look at the fact that soybeans are not being exported and talk about reality with farmers, if we can't talk about the facts, we can't talk about or at least say together, yes, these are the facts. Now let's argue about what to do about them, or maybe try to start with our values and what we want the world to look like and then deal with the facts and then have an argument about the hows. It's the delusion has permeated the ability to be able to have any meaningful political discourse. Again, I talked about this yesterday. It's why when I have debates with conservatives, they bounce from subject to subject. It's a litany of sort of grievances and things. But what? It's all whataboutism. And we can't break through that right now. So a farmer who is objectively, by any fact-based metric, doing worse now than they were during the Biden administration, especially the last 2 years, and by the way, Biden was cleaning up the Donald Trump COVID mess and the inflation mess. By the way, inflation peaked in, I believe it was June of Biden's first year on the job. Tell me whose inflation that is. Can't break through the delusion cycle. I'm not sure what to do about it except trying to get on the air with you folks every day and talk some facts. And here's the fact that we always need to remember. There's only one guy, one individual that is responsible for the shutdown, and it's this guy.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader. And he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is, in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States.
Of course they will, because according to Donald Trump himself, that's who is responsible. You got to come to the table. You got to bring the people together. You got to negotiate. You got to actually have a negotiation. It's hard to negotiate when you're in the middle of a delusion. Just saying. That's going to do it for me, folks. Stay tuned. We got a little Pete Schwab and Nightlight coming up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for the facts.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President Trump are pressing for his Justice Department to pay roughly $230 million as a settlement for investigations he faced during the Biden administration and during his first term in office. That, according to sources familiar with the matter. ABC's Catherine Falders has more.
We don't know if he's picking up the phone every day and calling Pam Bondi, the attorney general, and saying, get this done. But the reality is the people who would make these decisions and sign off on it are the people who represented him in the investigations that he is seeking settlement money over.
Plans are off for President Trump to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Hungary or the immediate future. The White House says Secretary of State Marco Rubio held a call earlier with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, calling it productive. ABC News has learned Lavrov made it clear Russia opposed President Trump's suggestion to freeze the fighting in Ukraine on the front line. The government shutdown dragging into a fourth week. The Senate will take up another vote again tomorrow, aiming to end the shutdown. This is ABC News.